Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome to the very first episode of Following On County Cricketer. It's a tie-up, essentially, between TalkSport, the cricketer, and also Steve Harmison's YouTube channel, Bowl Fast, Talk Straight. This, what we're attempting is kind of unique. It's a radio show, a YouTube show, and a podcast all rolled into one. But the subject matter is far simpler. We will be talking about county cricket and nothing else. Every Thursday, you'll be able to listen or watch as myself, John Norman, TalkSport's cricket editor, George DeBell, and Nick Friend from The Cricketer, and two-time county championship winner Steve Harmison will be discussing all the main talking points from the week's previous county action and looking ahead to the next round of games. And we'd like you to get involved as well. So please do so either via Twitter or via YouTube. Before we get going, though, let me introduce my co-hosts. First up, Nick Friend from the County Cricketer. I'll be honest with you, Nick, I'm a little bit nervous about sharing a platform with yourself with the subject of county cricket. You know, this is a 45-minute show, but I imagine you probably speak about county cricket 45 minutes a day with everyone you meet. So this won't be a hardship.
Well, fingers crossed. But no, thanks for having me. I'm very much looking forward to it.
George DeBell is also going to be joining us. He's from a secret location at a top London hotel. I mean, he is the scoop. So, George, thanks so much for squirreling away a little bit of time to join us this week.
It's a huge pleasure.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, let's get on with the subject matter. Every week we're going to be bringing you around 45 minutes of county cricket chat. And we're going to start by looking back at week one with the top line.
The top line.
Okay, Nick. Well, in the days of yesteryear, we would have seen county championship cricket on the back pages of all the national newspapers. It, of course, does dominate the cricketer. So what would you say is the top line from week one of the county championship?
I think just runs, wasn't it? Runs and not many wickets and a fair few draws. And yeah, I guess a far cry from what we've seen the last couple of months, really.
George, as you'd expect after the winter England have just had, the pitches, it only took one game for the pitches to be under the microscope again. Do you think that was fair? I mean, just 6 draws from 8 games, I think it was. I don't think that really tells a tale, though, does it? It's not really about the pitches, because actually, I think if the weather hadn't got involved, we would have seen a lot more results.
I thought the pitches were interesting, and I thought I saw a step in the right direction. But, you know, at the start of the season, ground staffs have had a wee bit of time to prepare surfaces, and that will be relevant. It gets more difficult for them as the season progresses and there's just so much cricket. But I thought that there was a tentative step in the right direction. I hope people don't jump in the direction of thinking the pitches have got too flat, because I think we probably need a correction of course in the county game, and it will take quite a while to get used to that.
OK, well, look, let's move on from the pitches chat. Let's talk about some of the notable moments. For me, I thought Nottinghamshire coming back, Sussex posting 375. Nottinghamshire were 4 down early on. And to turn that around, a real captain's innings from Stephen Mullaney, 192, and to win comfortably by 10 wickets. There are a lot of people's favourites for promotion, and they certainly showed why that is, Nick, on week one.
Yeah, I mean, and that was without James Pattinson, Stuart Broad, Dane Patterson, who, you know, on paper looked like the strongest attack possibly in the strongest team attack possibly in the country, let alone Division Two. I mean, they are favourites for a reason. I mean, even without those three, the top four is four guys who, you know, you wouldn't say are too far or have been too far from the England setup, and they're playing a Sussex side, too, I guess, at a very different point in their journey, aren't they? I mean, a very young side without the two overseas players in Pujara and Rizwan, Stephen Finn on debut, Tom Clark making his maiden first class 100, which is obviously significant, but, you know, two 17-year-olds in that team, Arch Lenham and Dan Ibrahim, who obviously made their debuts last year and impressed, mainly white ball stuff in Lenham's case, but in red ball stuff as well in Ibrahim's case. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I think if you ask a lot of people, you know, they would suggest that those two sides will end up at very different ends of the table come September, just with the way that Notts' strength and depth is, and with, I guess, the reliance that Sussex is going to have on that pair of overseas lads. But no, I think they'll have been encouraged by what putting 370 odd on the board first innings and then sticking at it. I think they're not in trouble at one stage as well, didn't they, before Mullaney's innings. So, but I guess the nature of being a very young side learning on the job is that, you know, that third innings becomes very important when you're 100 runs behind. And if you fold as they did for 170 odds against guys like Brett Hutton, who've been, you know, doing this for years, and perhaps has some of that experience that a lot of the guys in the Sussex camp don't have, I guess there is a lot of that kind of teething, isn't there? And I guess that's the challenge they're going to have over the next few years. And that, like, development's great, and it's great that it's a very young core, but you don't want to, I mean, it's a nice possible way, you don't want to develop a team of losers, for want of a better word. You don't want to develop a team that loses every week, because then you learn to lose, and presumably winning becomes that bit harder. So, yeah, that'd have been encouraged, but, you know, they were encouraged at times last season as well. I guess the key is turn those encouraging bits into four-day performance, isn't it? And then coming out with the result at the end of it.
George, were you at Warwickshire? I take it that you were. What was the feeling up there? You know, Warwickshire were in trouble, much like Nottinghamshire were. Four down early, big first innings from Surrey. But, you know, the experience told. Was it a positive feeling around both camps, I suppose? Gareth Batty's new reign. What was the feeling there?
They were cold, mainly. That will be my dominant memory of that game. Honestly, I have nothing but respect for the spectators who huddled in weather that a penguin wouldn't go out in. They've obviously been really looking forward to it, and it was, and they were treated to some old-fashioned attritional cricket. Now, I know my former and much esteemed colleague and friend David Hopps at Cricket Empire thought it was a shocking pitch and wicket. Hopsy, I should say, wasn't there, but he was obviously watching the stream. I thought it was an okay wicket. I thought it was. I thought, bearing in mind the game started on April the 7th. The reason I talk about the wicket again is because it did define the game. There's no doubt about it, it defined the game. Now, I wonder if Surrey had their chance again, whether they might have played Jamie Overton, who was just not picked. And they had Cameron Steele, who I think has got a concussion, actually, but bowls leggies. So you might have had pace and leg spin in a perfect world. And I wonder if we're starting to play on surfaces which are going to require those sorts of skills. And if that's the case, those are skills which are relevant in Test cricket. So what we might be seeing is slightly less attractive domestic product, certainly not giving the same sort of immediate fun of, you know, a 20-wicket day, which, whether it's helpful or not, is fun. But we might start to see a county game that actually prepares people for Test cricket a little bit better. Now, I think it's worth the trade-off, and I still think that actually it's a transitional phase. I'll say that again, because in time we might start to develop players with those skills. We might see more leggies. We might see more aggressive spinners. We might see more fast bowlers. But what we're seeing at the moment is lots of the dibbly-dobbly medium paces, for want, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, play on wickets that no longer suit them. And they are potentially the dinosaurs just after the meteors hit. They're in trouble if the pitches go the way I think they're going to go, and I think we are going to see a concerted effort to improve them this year. That, combined with the fact that there's 8 points for a draw, means you're maybe not going to see the bold cricket that you want. But I don't know how much bold cricket you see at Test level, really. So anyway, I think what we're maybe starting to see, and it's very, very little evidence so far, but it looked as if there's a concerted attempt to produce wickets which are more like Test cricket, with a view to helping England produce players which will do well in Test cricket. So there was a lot of chat about that this week. There was no complaint about the surface from Gareth Batty. Mark Robinson said it was a good surface, but he'd like a bit more pace. Well, of course, we all would, but it was April the 7th. It's not very long ago since when I started watching cricket. It was starting on May the 7th. Yeah, so you can't expect ground staffs to be able to bake in pace when there are snowstorms around. So I thought it was a good wicket in the circumstances, and I think we have to understand the bigger picture of what's happening in English cricket. And there needs to be a correction.
I think to caveat that with what George said actually at the start as well, is that it's very easy to jump to conclusions and say that we're going to have, you know, guys smashing Mark Ramprakash's records and scoring 2,000 runs. Like, there was a race, you know, it's funny, in all the narrative around, you know, batting county cricket and start of the season especially, you know, people forget that we had a race to 1,000 runs before the end of May last year. You know, we had David Beddingham averaging 140 through three games. We had Mason Crane and Matt Parkinson playing more in April and May than they had done ever in their life beforehand. You know, there were 620 overs of spin bowled last week. Like, this isn't a new phenomenon, you know, of big runs at the start of the season. I think there's a stat going around that shows that it's, you know, frankly, the difference between batting in April, the difference, you know, from July is actually pretty negligible. I mean, I think the big difference, as George alluded to there, and I'm sure Harmy could testify to as well, and played in Durham all his life, is it's freezing. But actually, in terms of, you know, the output of the batters, I mean, yeah, but, you know, the number of runs, you know, there were 20 centuries last week. You know, Matt Critchley scored a load of runs last year in April, and he scored a load of runs at the start of April this year. Like, it's not a new thing, and I think I completely agree with what George said there about the general direction. As he also said at the start, I think that's almost the more important point, which is that it's when there's too much cricket played. You know, Trent Bridge last year had a test, 400 doubleheaders, a Blast game, the Royal London Cup final, and a Championship game in the space of a month. And the test really is, you know, can you produce a good deck that allows batsmanship, you know, when you've got that amount of cricket being played on your surfaces and you've got that little time to prepare a wicket. You know, certainly at Lords, Middlesex hadn't scored 400 at Lords for 4 years until last week. There were five scores of 80 in the match. There were six scores of 80 there all of last season. So the proof, I think, will be further down the line than this week, which is always a pretty good one for batting, if that's fair.
I was going to jump in. A couple of things. Firstly, I think the ground staffs have got together and they have had a conversation, and they are trying to increase the quality. This perhaps the wrong word, but they are trying to do what's been asked of them. They really are. I don't think they were the problem necessarily anyway. I think quite often you've seen county coaches make demands of ground staffs which are actually unreasonable. The other thing was, to back up what Nick said, have a look at the Edgbaston hosting schedule for July. Just briefly, off the top of my head, I think they host a test against India, big test, yeah? Then they host an international T20 against India, 3 days later maybe. Then they host T20 finals day. We're not in the middle of the month yet. Then they've got a Championship game. And then they've got, say, eight or so, before the end of July, Commonwealth Games matches. Now, just about every one of those games is going to want to be played in the middle of the square, apart from maybe the Championship game, which is why the Championship surfaces are often relegated in importance, because it's the only one of those games that's not going to be broadcast on TV across the world. So we are asking our ground staffs to do a lot, and we're criticising them a lot, and I think they're the messengers. That was the point. But basically, it's the same thing that Nick said. We're asking too much of these people, and we have to be a bit reasonable, and we have to start to prioritise. But anyway, a cautious step, I think, in the right direction in these last few days. I welcome it.
I think what's also happened in the past as well is that with the result pitch and the demands from coaches, I think ultimately it's a competition. And once, if you start sensing that, you know, one team is, you know, let's take Somerset the last few years, you know, when they were playing on those big spinning pitches. If you're up there with Somerset, you know, going for the title, and you know that Somerset are going to get a result when they play at home, you know, you're almost compelled to follow suit, aren't you? Because you've, you know, even if you back yourselves to win on a good day, you know, you or on a you know, fair pitch. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you, if you're going for a title and you've got to sort of, you know, cling on to the coattails of the teams around you. If teams winning in 2 days, 3 days, you know, whether it's, you know, whoever it is, whatever the service is, you almost, from a competitive standpoint, are pushed into that same corner, aren't you? So teams, as much as anything else, making a conscious push towards, you know, towards that middle ground is perhaps where we need to go, rather than pointing fingers at the guys who are, you know, on the mowers.
Well, look, if you want nuance and intelligent debate and insight, then I think the last 10 minutes has just probably brought more to the table than in this subject than I've read for a long, long time outside of Cricketer, of course, and listened to on Harmy's show with Neil Manthorpe. Look, we talked about the top line. Let's have a look at some more of the individual moments that took place in week one of the County Championship.
Moments of the week.
Okay, guys, well, look, I WhatsApped you at the start of the week for some of your moments from week one, and there were plenty, weren't there? We've already mentioned Knotts coming back from 52 for four in first innings to go on to win by 10 wickets. There was Dominic Sibley's first baller, you know, after all the talk about his remodeled action. I mean, these things happen, of course, but it was certainly a dramatic end to day two at Edgbaston, despite the cold. There was Ryan Higgins with a century and seven wickets. And then a drop catch in the last over. There was Andrew Salter, who's an opening bat, but managed to take 7 for 65. Shan Massoud, you know, Derbyshire, not their rear guard action against Middlesex at Lords. I mean, there was so many individual moments within the week. What about some of the others that I've missed, Nick? What about yourself? What really stood out?
Well, I was at Lords and enjoyed watching Shan Massoud bat twice. I almost can't believe he left without 100. He will score a lot of runs, I think. I think he's worked out batting in England and he's very close with Mickey Arthur. And actually, that was one of my things. I just really enjoyed watching Darb's run Mickey Arthur and watching Mickey Arthur as much. I mean, that seems to be the amount of time that we've spent just watching Mickey Arthur, haven't we? Sort of, and, you know, impassioned on the balconies and international cricket.
It was quite shorts.
In his shorts. See, he wasn't in shorts at Lords. He would be a brave man to do that in the start of April. But it was enjoyable just watching, I think, the early impact he's had, the calming influence of Shan Massoud. You know, I thought Middlesex bowled very well in both innings. And actually, you know, second innings, Massoud brought up his 50 when Derby was 60 for no loss. You know, he basically went long at a run a ball in both innings. You almost couldn't believe it when he ran down at Josh DeCare's off-spin and was stumped in the first innings. I mean, he seemed set for a pretty big 100, really. I mean, the impact of those two, Saranga Lakmal, who averages about 200 overs a year, I think, across his career, bowled 40-odd overs in this game alone. So he's got his work cut out post-May. But I was really interested, you know, just his, I guess, that sort of innate positivity that he brings around with him was, I think it shone. I mean, I think there was a sense that that was a game that Middlesex might have lost last year. They lost a few games where they were defending big scores in the final day and managed to lose the sort of record chases. But equally, it was a game that Derby would probably have lost last year as well. So two teams under new coaches, Richard Johnson and Middlesex, I thought would both have been very encouraged. Middlesex especially, actually, because of the way that Lords played last year and how few runs there were. There were 200s all year at Lords last season, the Championship. And there was one on the first day this time around. There were five guys who reached 80 as well, or who reached at least 80 in the game. So that, I think, is definitely a good step for them. And I think it brought the best out of Tom Helm as well, who, if he's fit and he bowls like he did last week all season, he won't be far off from conversations. And he's been with England Lions, he was with England in the white ball stuff over recent winters. He's tall, he's quick, he bowls away swingers, he's not just looking to hit the stumps. So I thought there was a lot to be encouraged by both teams. And actually, just for Div 2, I thought as a whole, it was a very, very good game of cricket. You know, if you look at the scorecard, it'll look like quite a mundane draw, but there, you did genuinely feel like there were three results possible going into that final day, and probably going to the final two sessions as well. So, no, I thought that was just a very good game of cricket, and that was, yeah, I think my main takeaway from being there for 3 days. The other one that you touched on was Ryan Higgins' knock, and that game as a whole, you know, James Bracey's ton was, I watched that on the stream actually from Lords, and I reckon of all the hundreds we saw last week, probably came in the toughest conditions, put in, going on and off for rain on that first day, you know, on the back of what he went through last summer. Worth remembering at the end of the year with a Lions ton against England Day. I mean, I think people have very short memories and people are very quick to write 23-year-olds off often the first time they've ever seen him play cricket when they make their test debut. But so I have to say, I've got, you know, I was really pleased from in Australia, and it's nice to see him start the year in Div 1 in that fashion. So I think he's a guy who, given the right opportunity in the right position, will come again. And likewise with Ryan Higgins, who's in almost that sort of difficult spot of being a very good medium pace all rounder in this country, which I guess places you at the top end of the county cricketers, but possibly doesn't get you an England berth. But if he can score 1,000 runs 3 years in a row, and, you know, 2 years in a row in Div 1, and take his wickets, you know, why can't you be Paul Collingwood? You know, no one talked about Collie's medium pace when he was averaging 14 test cricket, did he? So, yeah, and that was some knock as well, 140. And he's one of the best county cricketers in the country, isn't he? So, and he has been for a few years now. And Middlesex probably can't believe they let him go.
And what about you, Harmy? What moments really stood out from week one of the county championship?
Yeah, the interesting one was Nico, Paul Nixon, not, you know, Leicester managed to save the draw. Has had 104 off 280 balls to, you know, 9 down, carries back from, you know, when you're thinking Worcester. Again, Pollock, it's a good move for young Pollock. Ed Pollock moved from Warwickshire, not standing still, thinking, right, 2-3 years at a big county, I'll get me chance eventually. He's grabbed his own career, which I think a lot of good young players can take note from that. If you're not getting a game, you know, if you're in charge of your own career, go and find a place to play and forge a career that way. Pollock goes down to Worcester and gets 100 there. Libby, the run machine from the start of last season, he got runs as well. But Leicester, not getting beat first game of the season because of, you know, rear guard action by one of their opening batsmen. That stood out for me. Like Nick mentioned before, you know, the games at, you know, the game at Lords Durham, you know, the weather beat them a little bit. Glamorgan, they had a chance for, you know, 4 wickets down, 80 runs. Glamorgan 80 runs behind, and a great partnership by young Carlson. Another one we talked a lot about. Me and Manners talked a lot about at the start of last season, along with Matt Critchley, Ryan Higgins. They got runs. Him and Cook, you know, 92 run partnership to save the game for Glamorgan, because that would have been an innings victory for Durham. Which was good. Somerset don't look in a great place. Back end of last season, they didn't look great, and this season they haven't started off very well. Hampshire look as though they're strong, but I agree with what Nick was saying there about young Bracey. You know, don't judge him on what he had for England. I thought Gloucester starred brilliantly last year until James Bracey got picked for England. And when he got picked for England, when he came back to Gloucester, Gloucester's sort of his struggles and Gloucester's struggles went a little bit hand in hand. And I mentioned yesterday, 2 days ago on the Cricket Collective about Ryan Higgins, and I was wrong by saying it, and I am wrong by saying it. Is he good enough fourth seamer? Probably not. Is he a good enough number six? Possibly so. The one thing I will say during my sort of career, Mark Elam got better when he went into international cricket. From a sort of fourth seamer, 78, 77, 78, skiddy mile, trajectory mile an hour bowler, and a lower order batsman. And you never know when somebody goes into international cricket, if they get the chance, it might just make the best of them. So I'm not ruling Ryan Higgins out just yet of being that very, very good for first class cricket, not quite good enough for test match cricket.
And what about you, George? Apart from Rory Burns trundling in to bowl a couple of overs at Edgbaston, have we left you anything else in terms of moments from week one of the county championship to reflect upon?
Oliver Hannan-Dolby's innings was ridiculous. I think he set a new record. I mean, he got off the mark in the 94th minute of his innings. I mean, it was. The Dom Sibley innings was really interesting. Should we talk about Dom Sibley? Okay, so Dom Sibley has made lots of interesting decisions. He decided not to go on the Lions tour, to stay at home and work on his technique. He hasn't signed a contract offer at Warwickshire, so he's out of contract at the end of the season. He wants to play T20 cricket, which is an absolutely fine aim, but you wonder how he's going to get into that side now they've signed Alex Davis and what have you. And he looks terrific in pre-season and in the nets. Much more conventional, little open front foot, but basically almost conventional. And first ball, he pokes at one. It swung a wee bit. It did swing a wee bit. And if you swing the ball, you know, and put it in decent areas. But basically, I don't know whether he was nervous, whether he was trying to be assertive. He knows this is a huge few weeks for him and his career. And he's out first ball. And, you know, all that work and all that sacrifice comes to nothing. And I guess he'll get more opportunities. But this feels like a huge 6 weeks or so in his career. I think there's every chance he could get back in the England side. He's been working with Neil Stewart, by the way. He's gone back to working with his boyhood Surrey coach. Neil Stewart has worked a lot with Rory Burns, for example. Well, a whole generation of Surrey talents. Alex Brother, for those who don't know. Very excellent reputation as a batting coach. And it's interesting that, of course, Dom Sibley is a former Surrey player. He's out of contract and is working with a Surrey coach. You know, I don't think anything's sorted on that regard, but you wouldn't have to be a soothsayer to suggest, you know, he might be a Surrey player again soon. But I think, actually, his story is yet to be written. It feels like a crossroads moment, because right now he's desperately trying to get back into the England side. There is a vacancy. He might well be one of the best people, best qualified people for the job. And he looks like he can bat again. But I say that on the basis of a first baller. But in the nets and in pre-season, he looks like he's playing really well. And it would be desperately disappointing for him. But, yeah, really interesting. And then, meanwhile, Oliver Hammond-Dolby, 94 balls. And Michael Burgess will be grateful for him forever. I think when he came in to bat, so Ollie Hammond-Dolby came in 11. I think Burgess was on 69. He finishes 170-something. Not the best innings you'll ever see. It was terrific and all, but he was playing, you know, he smashed Ryan Patel and Rory Burns and people like this, Will Jacks. It wasn't the most intense cricket you'll ever see. By you know, had Alistair Cook come on to bowl, it might have raised the standard. But he did it, and there had been lots of tough cricket to get to the stage where he faced some rubbish bowling. So he deserves a lot of credit for it. But those are the things I'll probably remember from that game. Sibley, to be honest. And Oliver Hammond-Dolby.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, I'm glad that you mentioned Dominic Sibley, because the next section of the show is England Player Watch.
England Player Watch.
Okay, let me rattle through some of the scores by some of the players that you imagine will be fancying, they need to get in the selectors' minds, whoever the selectors are these days. You just mentioned Dominic Sibley. He was out for a duck first ball. But Rory Burns, his former England opener, a little better, 41, although I'm sure Steve Hutchinson made note that he was out the ball before lunch, which does seem to be a continual problem for Rory Burns. 22 in second innings, that was a not-outer. Ollie Pope, again, 58. Okay, good score, but frustration as he departed. Ben Folkes was dropped a couple of times, but did what he needed to do. 132 not out. All those three against Warwickshire. Alex Leese, of course, 182 not out at the top of the order. for Durham against Glamorgan. All of those, or both of those matches, were drawn. Dan Lawrence only scored 7 against Essex. And in fairness, a lot of other players in contention didn't play. But I'm sure, Nick, you might have been keeping your eye on another couple of players who also fancy their chances if they put a strong run together over the next 6 weeks. So they might be mentioned in dispatches as well.
I mean, yeah, I was hoping Sam Robson would play, but he's got a thumb injury. I just thought Robson was, and Adam Lyth obviously starts his season this week. I think Lyth was pretty close to getting back in last year, wasn't he, before Hamid came in. As George said, there's obviously you know, at least a spot at the top of the order. I hope Alex Lees did enough in the Caribbean to give himself a bit more of a shot. I mean, there's no point in, you know, you've got to give guys a go, haven't you? Like, before you, you know, and a go is not 3 games, in the same way that in James Bracey's case, a go is not 2 games. And
it is a bit of a go, Nick. It is a go, though, isn't it? 3 games. On the flattest wickets you'll ever play on.
It is a go.
I don't disagree with your conclusion, but it is a go. No?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you go back to, you know, yeah, no, I mean, it is a go, but I think if you go back to 2014, 2015, you know, when England picked Adam Lyth for a few games, Sam Robson for 7 games, like, I've always found it very odd that the guys who England went to fairly soon after Strauss were given, you know, who were therefore at, you know, towards the top of whatever the pecking order was then, were given a very brief go, you know, as back then the generally accepted best guys for the job, and have never been seen again. You know, Sam Robson scored 1,000 runs at Lords last season. You know, that is millions. You know, he got one or two tons at Lords. Got one of the two tons at Lords all last season. That was against Somerset, which was a Craig Overton, Jack Leach, Josh Davey, Marshall Delanger, Lewis Gregory attack. Say so one of the better attacks in the country. I mean, got a double ton at Hove. You know, he's never really had a shocking year since he came out of the England setup. You know, and I also think, you know, so look, if you look at someone like Alex Lees at 28 years old, you know, having moved on from one county to sort of rediscover his game. I mean, guys like that, guys like Robson, guys like Lyth, you know, I would have thought with that age bracket, perhaps the guys that England should be looking at, rather than, I think Joe Weatherly spoke to Sam Morse at the cricket a couple of days ago and said that, you know, for a young player opening the batting in England is the toughest thing you can do. You always need to have those hits and those knocks and those struggles before you fully work it out, don't you? I think a lot of guys have said when they've been dropped that England top six that, and I'm obviously going to say this, but they would feel better going back in, you know, going back into the fold, knowing then what it takes. And I think, you know, I think it's very easy to look for the next cab off the rank, whether it's Jack Haynes at Worcester, whether it's Tom Clark getting his first 100 for Sussex and all that kind of thing. When actually, I think the right answer is often staring right, you know. Has often been staring at you for quite a while, and it's just, you know, Adam Lyth got a very good 100 against New Zealand, you know, years ago, but was binned after a poor Ashes series. You know, has never been seen again. Got 1,100 runs the year after he was dropped, but that was that. Sam Robson, as I say, has never really failed, never really had a shocking year since he was dropped, but he's never been back in the conversation despite his runs last year, despite England taking pretty untried openers, you know, on the back of one and a half good years and sort of, you know, as young players to Australia on that Lions tour. You know, people were talking about Tom Haynes last year. I think you'd like Tom Haynes to do it for another year, wouldn't you? You know, he'd never averaged above 30 up before last season. So I think if England want to find the right answer, they've got to be giving goes to the guys who are perhaps, you know, perhaps at that point in time got the best chance of succeeding. Whereas, you know, if you go to Bracey or to, you know, let's say Rob Yates to be given a go mid-Ashes series, he's had 1 year. You've got to give guys the chance to learn how to fail almost. If guys are failing for the first time in international cricket, you know, sorry, if guys are failing for the first time in their career in international cricket, you're doing it in front of so much more scrutiny than you've ever faced before. You know, how do you deal with that? How do you come back for it? Like, so for someone like Alex Lees, who has struggled at Yorkshire, has come back at Durham, has done it, like, he's so much better equipped to cope with international cricket, I'd have thought, than lobbing guys in for the first time and hoping for the best, if you know what I mean.
Harmy, do you think it is easier to make the transition, or it was easier to make the transition to international cricket 15 years ago than it is now?
Yeah, because we had better players. I think we had better players, and we had a more sounder, sort of structured group. We had less, we didn't have social media. We didn't have the players on the outside who were better than the players on the inside, what was perceived to be. my thing on the younger players is we are very quick to judge. We are very quick to pick young players who have got technical deficiencies, who are going to go on a roller coaster of emotions throughout their career. And we are quickly to discard them, i.e. Sam Robson. We are quickly to discard quite a lot, especially at the top of the order. But we never seem to want to bring them back. And that's where the Dom Sibley bit comes into it. If Sibley's got technical problems, if he's fixed them technical problems, mindset-wise, he's got the game for international cricket. Yeah, I look at Alex Lees. Because he's 28, I think you have to give him a little bit longer of a chance because he isn't coming back. But that's also been my bugbear. We pick 23-year-olds. If they sink or swim, we're not going to get an Alistair Cook out of nowhere. We're not going to be that lucky again. Or a Joe Root. We've got to give some of these guys a chance to have a mindset of international cricket, an understanding of what it's like. And I actually think these seven games, a lot of our players should have been playing in these seven games to rediscover their own movements, their own technical problems, and try and get some runs on the board. You could have issues with your game. But if you go and get back-to-back hundreds in a first-class match against opposition, well, lesser than you've just been playing, i.e. in the Caribbean or in Australia, then you're going to come back and feel a hell of a lot better when on 2nd of June when the summer starts. So I think Alex Lees, for me, gets an extended go. He gets a majority of the summer. Because I looked at Lees in the West Indies and I thought he looked quite nervous. I thought technically there was an issue of falling over. But he showed in that last test match in Grenada the value of his wicket. The ball that went along the floor, I felt sorry for him because while everybody was giving their wicket away and everybody was flashing out, he had some value to his wicket. So for me, I give Lees an extended run. I agree with Nick about Sam Robson. If he comes back and he's better technically than he was before, because you've got to remember when you talk about what was the transition like? Transition like is about the bowler. And the bowler in first class cricket is nowhere near as good as the bowler in test match cricket. That's a given. But he will put you under a hell of a lot of pressure. And the problem I've got with international cricket at the minute from, across the world, majority of sides, is they don't deal with pressure that well. Players don't deal with pressure now that well, which is crazy in the world of T20, where the pressurised situation, 10, 12, 14 and over. But in test match cricket, it just seems as though you put, as a bowler, you put four or five good overs together. Johnny Bairstow, I'll give it away. Players will give their wicket away. So for me, Alex Lees, for me, stays in that side. I think it's a big 6 weeks for Ben Folkes because there was a lot of clamour for Ben Folkes to come back into that side. Did he do himself justice? Both gloves and bat. I'm not so sure, but it's a great start for him, 130. Because the likes of, I'd like Bracey, I don't think Bracey should be discarded. I thought it was a very, very tough thing for him to do when he came into that side. So I just think we are very, very quickly in this country to pick young players, but then think, right, he's not good enough and never pick him again. And that is what our problem is.
Okay, I think that's a subject that's going to continue, which is good because we're going to be back next week. But let's look now at what we think is going to be the game of round two of the County Championship.
Match of the week.
So what awaits us, eh? I mean, at the start of every test series, it's always about the questions that are going to be answered. And the same thing for the County Championship. I mean, Somerset versus Essex is one of... We could have picked, I reckon, three different games as our game of the week. We've gone for Somerset versus Essex. How do you rate Essex title credentials? I think you've tipped Hampshire to win Division 1 of the County Championship this year. What have Hampshire got that maybe Essex don't?
Hampshire were a ball away from winning it last year when Crane had two balls at Parkinson. And effectively, they finished one delivery short. And they've added Ben Brown, who keeps wicket and averages 45. And I think he's one of those guys who's getting back with age. And to be honest, Hampshire probably couldn't believe their luck when the chance to bring him in was available. And as well as that, they've got Kyle Abbott and Mohamed Abbas and Keith Barker and James Vince, and they've just got a lot of very good cricketers, I think, haven't they? A pretty, I don't say settled top order, but Ian Holland's done a decent job there for a bit of time. Joe Weatherly, that was his first 100 for 4 years, I think. And you'd like to think someone like him as a, say, one of the young lads who's had probably the toughest job in the game for the last few years, you know, you'd like to think and like to hope that that can push him onto something. Likewise, I'd like to hope that Mason Crane plays, you know, is played, you know, plays pretty regularly. Obviously, they've got Liam Dawson as well, that means they don't have to pick a leggy, but it does. But I think having a spinner in the top six does also give you that chance to pick a leggy and be really attacking. And I think, given the strength of their top six, it must be pretty tempting to, you know, to field a really attacking spin as well, because they, I think it's just hard to look at them and see a real weakness. I mean, they brought, I think James Fuller played that first game because he adds a bit extra pace. They've got Brad Wheel as well. He saw got 80 in the twos yesterday, actually. But he, you know, I think we saw a lot last summer. He's a very, you know, very good bowler. I just think they've got better than last year, and last year they were only a ball away from winning it. So, yeah.
I can't fault the logic. Harmy, do you agree? Do you, Hampshire, your tip for the championship, or do you fancy Surrey if they've got the return? If they've got Pope all season, they've got Burns all season, they've got, you know, they've got quite a few players coming back into the fold. Where do you see it going?
Surrey for me, I think I look at the Hampshire side and I like sides who have got experience because of what first class cricket is in this country. The emotion of, you know, playing a lot in consecutive days or in short space of time. And I think you've got level characters there. You've got some level heads there at Hampshire. I think they've got a lot of bases covered. But I think 1-11, if you put Hampshire's best team out and you put Surrey's best team out, I think Surrey comes out on top. But the DM's not played on paper. And as the summer goes on, where is the sort of mindset of the likes of Rory Burns if he doesn't get back in? Where's the mindset of Ollie Pope if he's not playing for England? Does he grasp the thing by the, you know, the scruff of the neck and say, right, I'm going to put 100 on the board, double 100 on the board, I'm going to show the England selectors, while England are potentially 40-4 against New Zealand in the first test match, Pope smashes hundreds. Yeah, these are the things that, if Surrey players can get that right, then I think Surrey have got a better 1-11 than Hampshire. But I think Hampshire consistency might be a better thing for them against a side who you're just never sure of from a mindset point of view. So it's a big job that for Bats to get that right. And if he gets that right, I think Surrey win it, because they've got 1-11, a better side than what Hampshire got. I'm intrigued this week to see how Yorkshire go, though. Having been in that dressing room, and I know, you know, George, you've wrote a lot about Yorkshire, but it's about the time for playing now, and hopefully the Yorkshire players can move away from the off-field stuff, which is going to continue, but, you know, get on with their primary jobs, which is to play cricket.
Let's have a little look at the other games then, because we've actually mentioned Surrey against Hampshire in passing, but we do have another five games to cast our eye over in our county roundup.
County roundup.
Well, look, we just made mention of Yorkshire, and I think it's fitting that we start there. Gloucestershire against Yorkshire. It will, of course, be the first match that Yorkshire have played since the Azeem Rafiq story really took centre stage and has dominated proceedings, as it should have done a long, long time ago, in fairness. George, of course, has been at the forefront of that happening. And Harmy has been at the forefront of trying to get the club back on kilter in a playing sense. So, you know, two guys really couldn't say there's nobody better suited to talk about the county. I mean, look, Harmy, you know Goffey better than most. We both know him very well. They needed a knight to come in and help them. He's answered the call. And we know on a personal level just how much he's invested in that. And I do wonder whether the scale of the task was quite evident at the moment he said yes to it. But he's gone in and he has essentially approached it with his wholehearted efforts that we used to see as a player and we saw as a broadcaster as well. And just got to hope it works for him.
Yeah, I'd hope it works. But I think it will work for him, because Darren will make it work and he'll get people to help him to make it work. Having never been interested in coaching anybody of ages 11 and above, and even struggle with any kids under 11, that I had no interest in coaching, and he convinced me that would be a good thing to go and help him, which I couldn't believe when he took the job on. I really couldn't. I was like, Darren, what are you doing? And he was like, no, they need me. They need me. You know, Yorkshire needs me. The club needs me. And it was like, really? Do you really want to go and do this after what you've just given? You know, your TalkSport career and everything that you've convinced people for 12 years now, you know something about football. And you're going to give all that up to go in and do this after where the club's at? I'll be honest, I was like, are you mad? And he was like, no, they need me. I'm a Yorkshireman. It's part of me. I've got to go and do it. And then he said, will you come and help us? Because I've got no coaches at the minute. So that was an interesting conversation. And for the best part of 10 weeks, I loved being in that environment. Because, like George said before, you know, these players are guilt by association. No matter where, you know, whatever has been thrown, they are guilt by association. And the quickest we could get to the thing I was messaging was the quickest we can get to the sort of the first week in April where the season starts will be where things start to progress for you as an individual, as a team, because you can have a right to reply from a cricketing point of view and let other stuff worry about that. You're desperate to get to the cricket point of view, and that's where we're at now. And fingers crossed from that point of view, they can start positively. And whatever comes off the field stuff, that's up for, you know, Darren and Lord Patel to sort of to take in their stride like they have done, because I think they have done it brilliantly. I really do. I think they've not shirked any questions. They've not shirked any responsibilities. They've stood up and, you know, they've been fair and they've been honest. And yeah, they might still have bumps in the road. But when it comes to the cricket side of it, I think Goffey's got the right team in place. I think Otis Gibson's an amazing appointment. The likes of Adam Lythe, Stephen Patterson, and one or two other senior players have to stand up in these over the course of this next month to get Yorkshire off to a good start. And if they do so, they'll get the faithful of Henley behind them, and fingers crossed they do.
OK, so that's Gloucestershire against Yorkshire. We've made mention of Surrey against Hampshire. Let's cross over to the Pennines, not that they're playing there. Lancashire's first game of the season. Jimmy Anderson won't be playing. And they're coming up against Kent, who batted well, actually, in first outing. Nick, run your eye over Kent versus Lancashire. And while you're at it, give us your thoughts about Notts versus Glamorgan as well.
Well, Kent got a lot of runs against Essex, and obviously without Zach Crawley as well. I think obviously Ben Compton got his first county championship ton. Interesting to see how they, assuming Crawley comes back in, it'll be interesting to see how they sort of work out their top six, with Jordan Cox also getting 100. But obviously Lancs, I actually think Lancs have got a very good chance to win the title as well. They're good, they're well rounded, they've got a very good leg spinner who, I guess, after another, I guess, I don't want to say, don't call it a pointless winter, but another winter watching everyone else play cricket. I'm sure Matt Parkinson just can't wait to get out there and do what he did last year, which was take a load of wickets early season and, you know, have a very good year, you know, all told with the Red Bull. And they've got Hassan Ali for the start of the season. Obviously, Jimmy's not playing that for this first game, is he? But you know, they'll probably see a fair bit of him in these first few weeks as well. And even if the decks are pretty good for batting, I'm sure he'll find something on them. I think it was against Kent last year that Jimmy took, was it 7 for 20? Is that, he got his, brought, took his 1,000th wicket against them, I think. So, I think it'll be a good game. Kent are interesting, aren't they? Because they obviously had a very good year in 2019, which is what Div 1 is based on, and then didn't have a great time of it. They ended up winning Div 3 last year. So, it's sort of interesting to see where they are, and I guess how they fare this year. I think they've got a good bunch of, they've got a good bunch of seamers as well, with, I think, sort of led by Matt Milnes and Darren Stevens, and I think Harry Podmore's been playing there too. They've got a fair few options there as well. And with obviously Sam Billings to come back at some point from the IPL. As for the other game you mentioned, I can't remember what you said. Was it Notts v Glamorgan?
Notts Glamorgan, yeah.
I think Notts, I don't think there's anyone who doesn't think Notts will get promoted from just with the resource they've got. But Marnus has arrived, isn't he, for Glamorgan? And I think we touched on Kieran Carlson earlier. He had a very good, he's an interesting one, isn't he? He's still very young. I think he was at one point the youngest player in certainly the country to hold both a first class fiver and a first class 100. He's hardly bowled since, but he was man of the match. And I think he was man of the match in the Royal London final last year. He's a good player. He's taken a lot of responsibility as a young guy there in that competition. And there's a lot of hope, I think, that he'll be you know, that he will really turn that into sort of consistent Red Bull runs. I think I'm right in saying that until midway through last year, he was still sort of studying at the same time. So they'll be, I mean, they'll be a good test. Right? I mean, be interesting to watch sort of that high class Notts Dame attack against him, especially if he's in early, because Glamorgan haven't historically found a particularly sort of solid opening stand. I mean, Andrew Salter is an off spinner who found himself over the batting rather than an opening batter who found himself taking seven for. So it'd be interesting to see how he fares against that attack. And, you know, even without those big names that they didn't have against Sussex, you know, Luke Fletcher had a brilliant year last year and is a very good county cricketer. And I think Liam Paxton White's at five for, didn't he, as well? And Joey Everson, who's only 20, I think, 20, 21, got his maiden tons. So there's a lot of depth there. That's him before you get to the you know, the Slater, Hamid, Duckett, Clark sort of top four axis. So yeah, and obviously Steve Mullaney got 190. So I think it'll be difficult to beat them this season. I think we'd all be quite surprised if they didn't go up.
What about you then, Harmy? Durham against Leicestershire. Draw first out for Durham. Marcus North now, it seems like he might be staying at the county, if reports yesterday are to be believed. George, no doubt, will know a little bit more whether he's going to tell us or not. Durham against Leicestershire then. How are you seeing that?
Yeah, Leicester obviously mentioned before that staying up with one, well, draw the game with one wicket left. I fancy Durham. I think what Nick said about Notts, I think if there are teams going up, I think it'll be a shootout between Notts and Durham, especially when they get Cast back. I think that's a big boost for them. Durham look as though they've got, up until that first test match, they'll have a lot of runs. Beddingham, he's an excellent player. Borthwick, established, you know, first-class cricketer. Lees, with a test match around the corner, wanting to get as many runs as he possibly can under his belt, started well. I just see that there's only one winner there for me, and that would be Durham. They would have won last week if it hadn't have been for the weather delay. And I think it'll be a straight shootout between Notts and Durham on who goes up. The only thing that'll beat Durham this week is potentially the weather. But for once in the northeast, the forecast's not too bad. It's going to be a little bit warmer. It's going to be less rain. So we should get 4 days in. If we get 4 days in, I think Durham will have too much for Leicestershire.
OK, guys, well, look, we're approaching the end of the show and I hope that the listeners and viewers have enjoyed it so far. Get your questions to us. Our Twitter handles are all on screen. But if you're listening on TalkSport 2 or on Following On Podcast, then drop us a line. cricket_TS, myself, Fulham John, @FulhamJohn, or get in contact at the Cricketer Mag. We've all picked one player that we're going to be following the fortunes of this season. I will let each of you briefly describe who it is, how they've got on so far, if they've played, and just why it is that you have chosen this player as your one to watch. Nick, I'll start with you. Who is your player to watch in 2022?
I've chosen Ed Pollock, who Harvey touched on earlier, actually. He conveniently started with a ton, which makes this a bit easier. But no, I think he's one of the more interesting cricketers in the country for a few reasons. Made his Blast debut in 2017... For Birmingham Bears, having been picked up through the sort of, he was released by Worcester as an 18-year-old through the academy as an off spinner actually, and then got back in through the combination of MCCU club runs, twos runs, now national counties runs. I mean, I've got a lot of time for that. You know, I think he told me recently that he spent one June he reckons where he played 28 days of cricket, just driving the length of the country to get himself back in. Got himself back in, weirdly, through Red Bull runs, through scoring league runs, which is Red Bull cricket. Got a double ton, I think, for Herefordshire. Got runs for Durham twos, where he was at Durham University. You know, got a lot of Red Bull runs, and then came into Warwickshire, who obviously, you know, among others, have had, I guess while he's been there, have had, you know, Dom Sibley, Jonathan Trott, Ian Bell, Sam Hayne, a lot of guys to get past in Red Bull cricket. And strangely, joined Worcester, having never played a county Red Bull game. He played the odd MCCU game at Durham, but nothing in the Championship or the Bob Willis or anything. So made his name, despite getting into the club through Red Bull runs, actually through his white ball stuff, and developed this reputation very quickly as a sort of extremely cavalier, leg side, heavy left-hander. And, you know, as it goes, teams gradually work you out and start bowling wider off stump and stop bowling leg spin at you, and found the going a bit tougher in the last couple of years. And obviously, as Warwickshire and Birmingham Bears got stronger, he found the going a bit tougher and reached the end of his contract and... Yeah, you know, he's taken the obviously moved home, as it were, gone back to Worcester where he started, and but with the genuine ambition of playing Red Bull stuff. And I've got, and I was quite fascinated to see how that would go, because I guess beyond Warwickshire Twos, no one really knew what his Red Bull game looked like in the last few years. So to start with a ton of 113 balls, which is, you know, sounds pretty sort of appropriate for, you know, given the players being the last few years, was, yeah, I thought, at first I just thought good on him, to be honest. And, you know, there was no malice on either side, I don't think, at his departure. And I think Warwickshire wrote a very, Paul Farbrace was very glowing in his sort of parting statement as well. I mean, there's, you know, I'm sure he could have looked for a white ball opportunity somewhere, but yeah, fair play. And, you know, open the batting Red Bull cricket in April is not a particularly, you know, there aren't, guys aren't exactly sticking their hands up, are they? So to go and do that in his first game, albeit not in a win, no, I was just really pleased with him. I thought, and I'm fascinated to see how he'll go in Red Bull cricket as the season goes on, but also as a white ball player, you know, probably as a more rounded cricketer as well, given that he's playing all the Red Bull stuff. So hope he goes well, and quite intrigued to see how he fares.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, my player is Dustin Melton from Derbyshire. I'm not sure how much he's going to play, but I came across a fascinating article a few months ago in The Cricketer. There was a video that accompanied it and really just gave an insight into a story I'd never even heard of before. A guy that has had a lot of troubles off the field. He's battled a lot of injury concerns, a lot of injury problems. And essentially, you know, he came to this country from Zimbabwe, I think, Nick, to try and make it as a first-class cricketer, and he got a contract finally, what could have been the last time of asking. So I'm really going to be fascinated to see if he plays, how he gets on, and how it works at Derbyshire under, of course, everybody's favourite coach, Mickey Arthur. What about you then, Harmy, as we look to wrap up the show? Which player are you going to be keeping your eye on throughout the season?
I'm going bowler, obviously, and I'm going Durham. Somebody, you know, the kids that I've seen and know. I would have gone Carson if he had been fit, but I'm not sure how much cricket he's going to play throughout this season. So I'm going to go with a kid called Matthew Potts. He started the game against Glamorgan. He got 3 for 67 in the first game. I think there's a bit more to come from Potts. He played with the Northern Superchargers last year in the first 100. I think he can get a little bit quicker. And I think he could be a bowler that we could keep an eye on. I don't think he's express pace just yet. I think the more he bowls, the more first-class cricket he plays, the more body-hardened it gets. I actually think he bowls good lines, a good length. He's a tall guy, and I think there's a lot of room for improvement. And I think if he improves and goes, you know, through the early part of his career, I think he could get better and better. So he's one I want to watch and keep an eye on this summer. And playing at Durham, the wickets have got a little bit more in them for the seamers. Bowling alongside someone like Chris Rushworth, who is phenomenal when it comes to, you know, holding lines, holding lengths and creating pressure. Potts that little bit taller, that little bit quicker, might just benefit from the other end. So Matthew Potts is the one I'm going to watch for.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, we promised you 45 minutes of county cricket chat, and we have delivered 1 hour and 15 minutes. So good luck reducing that down to 42 minutes for the TalkSport 2 show, which will be airing throughout Thursday and Friday. The producer's name is Scott Taylor. I think it's important that people get their dues. He's going to earn his money today, that's for sure. You can also listen to it on the Following On podcast feed. So please join us there. And across on the Cricketers website and media channels. And of course, last but not least, Steve Harmison's YouTube channel as well. Bowl Fast, Talk Straight. That's the name of Harmy's YouTube channel. And we'll be back. I hope you've enjoyed what you've heard or watched. Please subscribe, review, and join us next week for episode 2 of Following On County Cricketer. Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.